first time I ever laid eyes on the mansion, I thought, oh, this place is spectacular.
There was something about the Playboy brand that had a little bit more of a mystique to it.
Be a playmate, it's a ticket to the high life.
It was fantasy land. We were like rock stars.
I remember her saying that all that glitters isn't gold.
Not everybody is who they say they are.
A cross-border manhunt is underway tonight.
She said that she thought she may have been drugged.
He suspected of brutally murdering his wife.
She just was the epitome of a model.
She wanted the world, and she went after it.
These horrible things could really happen to anyone. These were real people with real families. When you pose nude, a lot of people seem to think it grants them some kind of ownership of you.
I do love you.
It starts this vicious spiral.
None of us knew the road would lead to the dead end that it did.
There ended up being 6 shots.
They got into her room, they saw what clearly was a body.
No one who loved a human being would do this. She was beaten that bad.
Nothing can prepare you for that.
Hey y'all, welcome to Docu Talk Through, the podcast where I talk you through the best documentaries in the streaming sphere. And this is episode 18. And the title of this episode is The Playboy Murders. And this is going to be a limited anthology series of 6 episodes that give first-person insight into the world of obsession and murder that tragically affected the lives of 6 young women involved with the Playboy lifestyle. Again, this is going to be a 6-part series, and you can catch this on HBO Max. The first part of this series, episode 1, is titled All That Glitters. So let's get into it. Okay, so we start out with this shot of a water tower. The tower has the name of the town on it, Bellefontaine, and we're in Bellefontaine, Ohio. And this is October 29, 1991, and we're talking to Jim Tetrick, and he's a retired Bellefontaine PD. So he's saying on that date, he was in a gun shop, and someone came running down yelling that there's a gunfight going out in the street. So right next to the building that they were in. And as he's talking, we're seeing these Ohio streets. We're seeing these different buildings and everything. And he said he was with another off-duty officer, and they ran out, and they found 2 bodies lying in the street. They both had pools of blood around them and some spent .22 revolver casings. And so we see this fire hydrant with yellow, I'm thinking it's like B-roll with yellow crime scene tape around it. So he's saying like this was in the middle of the day, right in public. So it was bewildering that someone would do this right in the middle of the day in town. And it involves a celebrity, a Playboy model. And I guess the Playboy model is Stacy Arthur. And we see this Playboy cover, and we see this is January 1991, and we see the cover with Stacy Arthur on it, Miss Ohio. So we go to these shots of these Playboy models. Playboy models, because I see the bunny ears, but they're doing their thing. Seem like they're showing different scenes of these Playboy models at different parties, different events. We see the traditional Playboy costume, Playboy bunny costume with the, I don't know what you call them, the little leotard thing with the bunny tail on the back. And then now we're talking to Holly Madison. I think this documentary is actually either executive produced or produced by or directed by Holly Madison. So we hear from her. She's just talking about, when you thought about Playboy, you thought of beautiful women, you thought of nude photography. We keep cutting to these scenes of these different models while she's talking. And she's saying that a lot of women in the 90s and 2000s, herself included, saw Playboy as a stepping stone to a career. And so we hear this chick, Karina Harney Jones. Karina Harney Jones. That's a Harney is spelled with an H-A-R-N-E-Y Jones. And she was 1992 Playmate of the Year. And Karina Harney Jones talking about,
oh my gosh, I remember the first time driving through those gates. And I remember the first time I ever laid eyes on the mansion. I thought, oh, this place is spectacular. Just everything they do is wow. It's just wow. It's kind of like that, like the stars in their eyes. and you have celebrities wanting you. You have all kinds of things at your fingertips. You know, the sky's the limit. And I think Stacey kind of had that. And she thought, wait a minute here. This is everything.
So we hear Holly Madison saying that Stacey's story started out very, very wholesome, but there were some issues, there were some things that took her story to a much darker turn. So now we're on this cornfield. We're on this, we see this big corn silo. We're on this like farm. Okay, so we see Stacey's sister-in-law. Her name is Jana Arthur, and she's given a little bit of background into Stacey. Stacey graduated from high school in 1986, and we see her high school photo. Her name is Stacey Darland Trevorrow, and she's a Gemini. And her sister-in-law just saying she was a quiet, pretty girl, very talented in crafts and ceramics. So she had some artistry to her. But by the spring of 88, she was a manager of a craft store in Bellefontaine. Oh, wait a minute. She pronounced that different. Oh, it's not Bellefontaine. It's Bellefontaine. Bellefontaine. I was saying Bellefontaine is Bellefontaine. I was pronouncing it Bellefontaine. Bellefontaine. Okay, so it's Bellefontaine, Ohio. I bet people from Bellefontaine listening to this, if they're anybody from Bellefontaine or ever heard of or listening to this, probably was screaming the whole time I was saying Bellefontaine. Oh, so Stacey got a job at this craft store in Bellefontaine around the spring of 88, and she was the manager. So Jana's brother, Jim, opened a tanning salon on the second floor of this store. And that's where he met Stacey. Okay, so Stacey was married to Jim, and he worked above her in a tanning salon that he opened up. And we see a picture of them, like you know, a couple's picture. I don't know if it's not a wedding picture because they're in just like regular street clothes. So it's just like a, you know, the glamour shots type JCPenney picture. And she's saying Jim and Stacey hit it off and they were soon inseparable. So she was 19 and he was 34. So now we meet Danielle Arthur. And this is Jim Arthur's daughter. This is his daughter by a previous relationship. So now we see this journalist, Lucia Wallinghouse. And she's a journalist. And she's saying like that was this whirlwind romance. So he's previously divorced, had a child from previous marriage. Oh, okay. So they both been married and they both had kids from previous marriages. Okay. So they both, wait a minute. She's 19 and been previously married? God damn. All right. So they both been previously married. She got started a little earlier, I guess. 19 and she got a kid and he's 19. He's 34 and got a kid. And we hear his daughter again saying like, yeah, they were really happy. They found each other and they were happy together. On June 4th, 1988, they got married. So that was quick. So she had just started working in that store, that manager store in 88. Yeah, she just started being manager of that store that he put his shop on in 88. So they got married the same year they met. So we see this video, this home video from October 22nd, 1991. And we hear Stacey saying, wait till everybody gets here, and telling this kid to get his head back. Okay, so it's like a birthday party and she lit the candle on the cake. There's a four on the candle and she's telling this kid to wait till everybody get to the table and to get his head back because she don't want him blowing out the candle early. And his face is, his or her face is blurred out, the kid. So I don't know if it's a boy or girl. So we see this kid's birthday party. We see all these kids gathered around and we hear Danielle again saying she was the only mom that she ever knew for a long time. Okay, so that's Jim's daughter saying that she's the only mom she ever knew. Stacey was, because her mom and her dad separated when she was very young and Stacey adopted her in 1989. So her mom didn't have anything to do with her. Her biological didn't have anything really to do with her. So she called Stacey her mom. And as she's talking about this, we see in these different home videos, we see Stacey at Christmas. And we hear Jim's daughter saying the biggest deal wasn't that Stacey became her mom. The biggest deal with her was that Stacey brought this other little kid with her. So she had to get used to that. And that was the biggest change to her. It wasn't that Stacey being her mom, because she wanted that. But this new little kid in the house was a change, because she always just had an older brother. She didn't have a younger sister. And she's just talking about how she always like the way she dressed. She always had her pretty hair, always had these high heels on, talking about Stacy. And we just see these reenactments of Stacy getting photographed and posing, but she's not like in any Playboy style, but just like dressed up. So I want to know if she just like took pictures or did amateur modeling. And they're talking about she was very photogenic. And then she didn't. OK, so she didn't start modeling until her and Jim became, until they got married. And then Jim became her manager and her support staff. OK, so he supported her modeling and everything, doing pageants. And she won 32 different pageants, had all these different trophies. And as she won pageant, Jim had put her up for more and more pageants. As she kept winning, she gained more confidence. And then in June 1990, she won Miss Ohio. She was the youngest competitor, and she swept the competition. And then, so we hear this, the journalist talking, Lucia. She was like, that was a huge highlight of her career. And we see her riding down the street, Stacy riding down the street after she, you know, as Miss Ohio. She got the tiara on. She's doing the wave. She's riding on a, she's sitting outside the top, the T-tops of a Corvette, of a red Corvette. And Jim is driving, and there's a kid hanging out of the door. And so Jim was pushing her. He was like, you know, if you go in with Miss Ohio on your first go and being the youngest competitor and you swept the competition, you know, from there, it's like, hey, that's a start of something awesome. That's, you know, you, I mean, yeah, I guess for every state, when you win your state, it's pretty much saying you're the prettiest female in the state, right? Isn't that what the Mrs. whatever state is, saying you the shit, you know? And but to do it on your, I never even thought of that. Do women try multiple times? But she won it on her first go. And so Jim was backing her. He was like, hey, let's see what else we can do. Let's go higher. And I guess that led her to Playboy. And we hear Holly saying, a husband wanting his wife to be a playmate seems a bit weird. Yeah, I think that is weird. And as they keep showing Jim, they got this dude looking like a straight up ass creep. They got him looking like a creeper. He's like, I don't know what year this picture is, but say he's, let's see. They got married in 88. He was 34. That birthday shot was 91. He's probably 40 right now, but he looks 50. So he looks, not only is he older than her, he looks older than his actual age of her. You know what I mean? Like if he's 34, he looks 44. So it makes the gap look bigger. The age gap look bigger. Holly Madison is saying like, it may seem strange for a husband to want his wife to pose nude for everybody to see, especially back then. It's probably not as much now, but I imagine back then in the 90s and before, I imagine it had to be kind of weird. But Holly's saying, based on her experience, she has seen husbands be very, very excited to see their wives pose. It's like having a trophy wife. And she's saying that there can definitely be another side to it. It takes a really secure partner to be able to deal with that and to be able to be confident and supportive. I guess I'm not secure. I guess I'm insecure. I'm an insecure man then. If that's what it means, if you're not supportive of your wife want to show her titties to everybody, that means you're insecure. Okay, I guess that's what it is. Okay, so she won Miss Ohio, and that parlayed into a gig in Chicago. Okay, so she's moving out of little Ohio, Bellefontaine, Ohio. She's now in Chicago. Now we're in October 1990. While they were out there, they stopped at the Playboy headquarters. Is Playboy headquarters in Chicago? I guess I didn't know that. I thought it was in California somewhere. And so Holly is saying, like, you know, to people on the outside looking in, Playboy looked like a really glamorous upscale world. I think only women thought that. I don't think men think that. Well, I guess back then it was Playboy versus Hustler. Hustler was just down and dirty, but glamorous and upscale. I guess I can see that. Playboy was a little cleaner than Hustler. Hustler was, I mean, listen to the name, Hustler. Hustler was just a straight up skank of the nudie magazines, as we used to call them. But so Holly Madison is saying like people thought of Playboy as the glamorous upscale world. And we see this. We see this shot of the cast of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air posing with Hugh Hefner. We see Big Ears, we see Carlton, and we see the chick. I don't know, what's her name? Hillary. And we see, what's the dude with the Big Ears name? Will Smith. And we see him posing with with Hugh Hefner. And she's right. Playboy would have a presence in like family movies. You know, it was always on a sort of a joking level. But yeah, you will see, you never saw a Hustler in anything, but you will see the Playboy or the Playboy Rabbit or some mention, some notion, just in the weirdest scenarios. Like the picture they just showed with the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. So it was something, she's saying it was something that, yeah, it was a little bit racy, but it was so mainstream at the same time. It was just like that clean, it's that clean, them clean titties. You know, she's saying for Playboy to have a pageant queen as a centerfold sort of made it a big deal and kind of legitimized the magazine more. So Jim made arrangements to get a photo shoot and some videotape done, and they saw something in her that they liked.
Just a month later, Stacey was flown out to LA for her Playmate shoot, and that's unheard of. She was definitely fast-tracked. To go from being from a small town in Ohio, and just a month later, you're being flown out to LA, you're staying at the Playboy Mansion, you're doing this shoot for a huge magazine.
It was 91. They had me rooming with Stacey Arthur, and Stacey asked me if I wanted to go into the grotto, and I said, yeah.
Of course, it's also, you know, the famous place where supposedly everybody goes to have sex, and certainly many people did.
It's December 1990, and we're in Moscow, Russia. And we hear Lucia talking, and she goes to Russia to compete in the Mrs. America pageant. Wait a minute. So the 1990 Mrs. America pageant was in fucking Russia? What? Huh? All right, so we see this news article headline. It says, Ohio housewife set to appear in pageant, Playboy. Okay, it says, history has been made. Stacey Lee Arthur, Mrs. Ohio, who is deep in preparation for the Miss America finals in January, appears as Playmate of the Month. Okay, so the Playboy cover model notice comes out as she's preparing for Mrs. America. Okay, what's going to happen with this drama? So she was in the top 10. She was in the top 10 for the Mrs. America. And then at the same time, she was on a cover of Playboy and was the centerfold of the 1990 Miss Ohio, 1990 Miss January 1991. So I guess this is the 1991 cover. Yeah, January 1991 cover of Playboy. I guess it's not common to be on the front, on the cover and the centerfold. I guess there's only been a handful of women that's done that. Marilyn Monroe was one of them. So we hear Holly Madison saying in the 90s, the cover was usually reserved for a celebrity. And she's saying Pamela Anderson is the only other example that she can think of who was a Playboy Playmate of the Month, who was on the cover immediately. Okay, so that, I guess that's a huge feat. So this girl, her first time out, first time at this, was on the cover and, wow, I mean, now, hold up. I remember, wasn't Vanessa Williams, didn't she get a title taken from her for doing this, for posing for Playboy and winning a pageant? So I guess this girl, she broke some molds. You know, she was the first to do a few things. So now we see this, I don't know, what is this, like a op-ed? It says, for Mrs. Ohio, career barely starts to unfold. And this is that article. It says, history has been made. Stacey Lee Arthur, Mrs. Ohio, who is deep in preparation for the Mrs. America finals in Moscow, yes, Soviet Union, next month, appears as Playmate of the Month in January issue of Playboy. The abundantly endowed 22-year-old author said, holding both titles is a matter of principle. The stereotype, and this is a quote, the stereotype that's, that because you're in a Miss America pageant or a Mrs. America pageant, that you can't be sexual, I think that is wrong. Wait, what? I thought that's all it was about. Okay, I think that is wrong, and I'm ready to stand and fight for it. I want to get out there and make a difference for once. The Playmate data sheet provides some of Mrs. Ohio's other stands on issues, as written in her own hand. She wants to be a country music star, of course. She is turned on by such things as sensitive, well-built men. She has inserted a smile face between the well and the built. And fur rugs. She is turned off by stress. Mrs. Ohio's favorite foods are lobster, shrimp, and pizza grinders in the Ohio State campus. She and her husband, James, run a ceramic shop in Sydney in Shelby County. Okay, so that's her likes. That's a little bit about her. So we hear her sister-in-law saying it wasn't against the rules because nothing was stated at the time. And I'm thinking she's talking about the Playboy thing in the going along with the Miss America. But I guess the pageant people were shocked. So we see this Tri-State News Digest saying nude photos don't faze Mrs. Ohio. The journalist, Lucia, saying Stacey was all in it for the attention. She says, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. The beauty queen should be sensualized and the beauty queen should be out there. I agree. I mean, if it was porn, just straight porn, I mean, still, this is fucking America. Like, who? But I guess this was the 90s. So Stacey, she, you know, she wasn't bothered by it that they had problems with it. There was no rules or regulations stating otherwise. And so Holly's saying it's interesting how people react to a woman posing nude. All of a sudden it becomes everybody else's problem. You don't see that dark side. Like, these women don't know how much of a battle they're going to have until they're in it, like about being nude and stuff like that. They don't know how much controversy come with it until they're in it. And so Lucia is saying that she think Jim had big aspirations for her. You know, he was her manager. You know, he wasn't just her husband. He was a manager. So she was like product. She was like, you know, that was she was the business. She was the merchandise. And he was the one that was booking all the appearances. So she didn't really do anything that he didn't know about. He was the one making her into the star. And we see his daughter, she's showing these side-by-side pictures. She's showing the first one they showed earlier that I was talking about, just like a couple's picture. And she has, like, you know, her natural color hair, probably like, it's like a brunette, like a auburn brunette. He looked like a, you know, like he should be on a John Deere. In this other picture, she has her hair dyed and she looks a little more glamorous. He looked pretty much the same, if not older, a little chubbier, but she looks way more glamorous. She looks less naive. She even looked like she got taller. Maybe he's stooping down, or maybe she has on heels in the second photo, the glamour shot. Yeah, you see them side by side, and he looks the same, if not older. She looked like she aged in reverse. I don't know how many years this is between, but she definitely don't look like the same person. You wouldn't even know this is the same girl. Wow, that is a transformation. I guess makeup and hair and shit could, wow, she definitely looks different. And Holly's just sort of give insight, talking about how, like, you have someone coming from a small town, then all of a sudden making it big, and not only making it big, they're posing news and magazines for everyone to see. And if you get the wrong person that has the wrong idea about what's appropriate, pretty much somebody with some sort of obsession, it becomes dangerous. And when you're younger, your first time into this, you're kind of naive to it. You think everybody's nice, especially if nobody schools you on, hey, there's some monsters out there. If you didn't have a mentor that was older, that's been in the game before, to tell you, hey, you need to watch out, there's some snakes. So we're back talking to Jim's daughter, and she's saying from all she knew, her dad always wanted Stacey to be a Playboy bunny. And that's how they end up where they are now. Again, that's Danielle Arthur, Jim's daughter. So he wanted it more than her. And she's saying, Danielle's saying, she think Stacey did it out of respect for Jim. She don't even think it was really her idea. It was Jim's idea. Wow. And so we're back to Jana, Jim's sister. And she's saying, yeah, Stacey was modest. You know, she wasn't like wanting all the attention or anything like that. They would tell her she's beautiful, and she was, but she was like, think no. She would be like, you know, she was real modest, shy. She was trying to do music. She would remember in her little writing in the newspaper, she wanted to be a country music star. So that's what she was focusing on. She wanted to get into the music industry. And we see her singing in these little homemade videos, these little, like, I don't know, like somebody's trying to make a video. She got on like this cowboy hat. She's looking like the country girl. And I guess she was trying to get to Nashville at the time. Okay, so she was actually doing stuff to be it wasn't just a dream. She was like, you know, she was working it. She was trying to get into the music business as a country singer. It wasn't just like something she was thinking of. She had done stuff to get there. And then Playboy had backed her on that. Okay, so she using Playboy to parlay into this Nashville thing, into this singing country music thing. So they were trying to help her with connections in Nashville. So in an 18-month time period, she went from winning pageants to Mrs. Ohio to the cover of Playboy. 18 months. That is wow. God, man, that is wow. That's crazy. And so we see Stacey being the mom, and she's just like, she got on like this pink jumpsuit, and she just looked like a soccer mom or something. And she's bringing home a dog to the family. And the dog's name is Whiskey. So I guess even when she was doing all this, winning all these pageants, being on Playboy, she never acted any different. She never let it go to her head. She was just always the same.
I saw her as what she was, you know, a human being who had to get ready like everybody else and put one shoe on in front of the other, just like everybody else.
So Karina's saying she was just out of high school when she met Stacy. And so she felt Stacy was way more established than she was. And so she sort of looked up to her. You know, she was Mrs. Ohio. She was already on the front of Playboy and Centerfold. So she sort of looked up to that. And at the time, she was going further. And I guess she was looking at, since she got Playboy of the Month, what's next? Playmate of the Year. Jim was still proud of her, still excited for her. Keep waiting for the shoe to drop on him, getting bitter that she's getting all his attention. But so far, he's still backing her. He's still proud of the work she's doing. And I guess he would even do her hair. He would do her hair. He would do her nails. He would do her makeup. She was winning these pageants. Maybe he wasn't doing it when she was going for pageants. Because I'm like, if he was doing her hair, makeup, and all that stuff when she was winning these pageants, man, that's awesome. If that dude can manage her, do the pictures, do all this shit, and do her hair and nails, that's crazy. So I guess he was just trying to make sure everything was picture perfect. And we see this ad. It says, call the Playboy hotline, 1-900-740-3311. Let us entertain you. And we see a picture of Stacy. And it says, call Stacy Arthur, Miss January. And it says, Playmates on the Air. Sensational Stacy Arthur, Miss January, and other surprise Playmates share their secrets and reveal themselves to you. Leave your favorite Playmate a personal message. Playmates Online Live. Have you had a private talk with a Playmate yet? Each month, hundreds of lucky callers do. Call today to find out how. Okay, so this is how they find out who's going to be Playboy Bunny of the Year, through these phone lines to see which Playmate. I guess each one have their own phone number and to see who they want to talk to the most. And we hear this from Holly Madison. So this is how they sort of get a bead on who the people are liking more. And we hear Holly reading this article out of the Playboy magazine.
This is news. This year, as in the past, callers can go on record by nominating their choices for Playmate of the Year, but they can also hear messages from their favorite and leave messages for the ladies. Playmates will answer some calls personally.
Stacy was very, very serious about getting Playmate of the Year and very serious about Playboy and it being a catapult in her career. So she took that phone line very, very seriously and thought that was going to get her better standing with Playboy.
And we see this reenactment of someone calling the 900 number. So an operator picks up. And the caller would tell the operator who they want to talk to, and they will patch him through to the Playboy Playmate. And so, of course, the shenanigans start to happen. You know, these guys start calling in, and they start asking these questions. And these are just anonymous people. Imagine just getting a call from an anonymous person and them asking you questions. Some of these women were shy. At least they, you know, said Stacy was shy. So imagine what kind of questions they ask. You know they are not nice. You know they're not all nice. You know there's going to be some assholes out there asking all kinds of dumb questions. And this is how obsession happened, man. I don't think they thought this out. So, I mean, they could have been trying to, you know, hey, have you ever been to whatever bowling alley? Oh, how close you live to that bowling alley? Trying to figure out where they live and shit, you know? Have you been to this movie theater? Oh, what high school did you go to? So we hear Karina, she's saying, like, they were told not to really engage. So they did get some sort of heads up on what to say, what not to say, how to say it without pissing somebody off. If these guys on these calls start talking dirty, they would get disconnected. Okay, so they did have some protections for them or anything appropriate. They would automatically get disconnected. So the operators listening in on these calls. Okay, so they made $150 for 3 hours of being on the phone lines. And fans paid $3 a minute to speak to the girls. And she's just saying, like, you know, it was fun. You can make some extra money doing it. And it was just, you know, sort of one of the things that came with being in that world. And so now we see this home video of Jim with his back turned to Stacy, which is a weird, they're sitting weird on his couch. And she has her knees up and she has like rollers in her hair. She's facing towards him, but he has her back towards her, which is an odd sitting. If you saw this, you'd think they were pissed off at each other or something like that. And we hear the journalist again, Lucia, she's saying like their finances were sort of up and down. They had a lot of travel expenses. They started having money troubles around this time. And so to keep the lights on and all the business running, she was doing this. She was doing the phone line thing. We hear Holly talking about how the centerfold was sort of garner some realness of the model, you know, make her seem more down to earth. So on the back, they would have like the stats. And we are seeing the back of the centerfold. And it's just showing like her stats. Stacey Lee Arthur, 36D, waist 23, hips 35, height 5'7", weight 115, birthday 6'4", 68, birthplace Naperville, Illinois. And then just some, you know, some of her ambitions and turn-ons, turn-offs, favorite performers. You know what? I read it. So ambitions, to accomplish many things, but most of all, to become a successful country singer. Turn-ons, sensitive, well-built men, roaring fires, fast cars, great food, fur rugs, sexy music. Turn-offs, rude, conceited people, overbearing people, stress, my own impatience. Favorite performers, Sigourney Weaver, Sylvester Stallone, Reba McEntire, Lori Morgan, Arsenio Hall. Favorite foods, lobster, shrimp, pizza grinders on the Columbus, Ohio, OSU campus. Small town life, the good, no traffic, $1.50 movies, family dinners, the bad, closed-minded, non-supportive people, slow drivers, haha. New Year's resolution, to be a more positive, confident person. And after my experience with Playboy, it should be easy. And then we see pictures of her. We see like a regular picture, pictures before being a playmate. And then we see a picture of her just in like a bikini. But I think this is just like a down home picture. The goal of that was to make her seem like the girl next door. And Holly Madison is saying like she think it was a bad idea to have the girls being that accessible. In March of 1991, a fan had begun to call Stacy, her playmate line. He would just keep calling her. And his name is James Lindbergh, and he's a 32-year-old man who lives in California. So he started calling her all the time. And then Karina, the other former playmate, she said she remembered talking to James. And he talked about his grandma, missed his grandma, loved his grandma. See, fucking weirdo. And she's saying he wasn't inappropriate. He didn't say anything sexual. See, this is where I think women, yeah, I'm going out on generalities. When weirdos start opening up to you about sensitive shit, that's a red flag. It doesn't have to be talking about wanting to bend you over a table, a pool table, and getting gross and nasty. A red flag is if a man, a grown-ass man, starts talking to a stranger about intimate, soft shit. That's a red flag. If he starts talking about his puppy died, his grandma died, he's got divorced, red flags. That's not cute. That's red flags. No man does that. No sane man does that. So, a message to women. If a stranger started talking to you about some soft shit, a man, red flag. And she's saying he didn't say anything sexual. It was just the way he was so emotionally serious. Yeah, red flag. And she said she noticed right away that he didn't have a sense of humor. Okay, so she was picking it up. She picked up on how emotional he was. And she's saying that's not right. Okay, so she got it. But a lot of women won't get that. They'll be like, oh, I want to make him feel better. And she said he was the only one that made me feel kind of sad and bad. See? Yeah. And so, okay, so in one of Karina's write-ups, it mentioned that in Vegas, they used the water balloon tours. So they're highlighting this passage in this write-up. It says squirt guns or water balloons to startle out-of-towners. So they would, you know, they would throw water balloons and shoot out-of-towners, like tourists, visitors with water guns. And it would make them laugh. So when this dude called, when this fucking weirdo would call, he would make her feel bad about it. Like, why would you do that? I don't understand. Like, why would you have done that to people? And she was like, she would be like, I'm so sorry. And she would actually feel bad about it. And this dude would get mad. And she said he would like turn like a dime. That's when you hang up. And so now we see this reenactment of, I'm thinking this is Stacy in rollers. And she got the headset on. She's picking up a call. And Karina said that's when he started talking to Stacy more. They become like friends in his mind. So this dude set the record for the most amount of phone calls. He had spent over $15,000. See, that's when you block his number or some shit, man. But no, that money coming in just on this one phone line, right? It's just this one guy. And he wasn't making a lot of money. According to this journalist, he wasn't making a lot of money. He worked as a trucker and he was out of work for a while. But truckers make pretty good money. But if he was out of work, okay, Holly says,
that should have been a red flag right there. It's almost like if somebody was drinking too much at a bar, they might get cut off. I think with Playboy, profit was coming first in that situation for sure. Stacy said, it's okay. I'm fine. He's fine. He's harmless.
And Holly, you know, I don't know if it's through life experience, but they should have had her on the Playboy board. You know, I don't know how old she is. Maybe she was the same age they were back then and she didn't get it. But yeah, she's like, just like I said, that should have been a red sign. That should have been a red flag. But that profit, man, that almighty dollar. Stacy was like, you know, he's harmless. It's fine. He's just, you know, he's not talking sexual. And of course, nobody can predict these things. I mean, especially when you're so naive. But it's like nowadays, I wonder, will people be more suspicious? And this was a boiler, a steam pot about to boil over. Is that a metaphor? It was a powder keg about to explode. And so now we go back to these photo shoots with Stacy, and her life got real, real busy. You know, she was going places, doing autograph signings. She was still modeling, still doing PR work for Playboy. Would go to car shows, go to bars, go to events and things like that, and still wear that Playboy bunny outfit. And things was just getting crazy. And Holly saying, she's like, yeah, I can relate to Stacy's experience a little bit, but she's like, I didn't have it happen like that. And I don't know how old Holly is now, but I can imagine why Holly wouldn't have been just as successful, you know, as far as beauty goes. But she's saying, you know, it didn't happen with her like it did with Stacy. She was really an outlier. And so, and remember, doing all this, she's still a mom. She still got kids at home. So she's flying from Ohio to the Playboy Mansion to Nashville and back home for birthday parties, for events and gatherings and parent-teacher conferences and all that shit. She's still trying to do all that. But she will still get on that 900 number and talk for hours to make that extra money. And now we're in March 1991. James Lindbergh starts calling more and more often and talking for longer and longer periods. So I guess as long as they're on the phone, as long as they're paying, there's no limit to how long they can talk. I guess they can talk forever. And so they ended up putting in a time limit because he spent so long on the phone. So this dude created rules. He was so fucking awful that he put policies in place because of his creepy ass. And so Stacy's goal was to be this hardest worker. And I can kind of get that. I can kind of get that, want to seem like you can handle anything, don't want to say no to anything, want to take on all challenges, and want to show that you can handle it, you know, other situations that people think they can't. I can kind of get that. So she wanted people to be calling. She was all in for it. But the unfortunate thing about that is people can take that the wrong way, especially these freakazoids. We hear Jim's sister saying one time James Lindbergh got mad. He didn't like where the conversation was going. He got mad and he hung up. Uh-oh. Well, you got a freak that hangs up. But then he called back like a week or so later and he apologized to Stacy for his behavior. See, he think he has a relationship. When you have people doing this, man, so many red flags. This James guy started, wait a minute, his name is James and her husband's name is James. I just realized that. But he started calling again after apologizing and stuff. And he finds out her favorite color is pink, probably because she told him. And he sends her 70 pink balloons. And he would latch on to these details. So again, he's gaining little bits and pieces of information from her as they talk. Think of the hours they spent on the phone. Think of the hours. Every little tidbit, every little piece of information he's just getting from her and putting together the pieces of a puzzle to be able to probably eventually stalk her. I'm thinking he's gonna meet her in real life. He knew about her children. She told him about her marriage. And of course, he thinks, because she's a lunatic, he thinks they're friends. Because he's like, why would she give me all of this access if we weren't friends? Remember, she's not putting on this is not a fake persona. This is her. She's giving him the real ins and outs. It's not like these anonymous sex lines where you call some random person. It may be a dude behind the line sounding like a girl. You know, this is a real person. So late September 1991, he didn't call. And she actually finds his number and calls him. So she calls him and asks him if he's okay. And so now he's like, what? So she gave him her personal phone number. She accepted his gifts. Yeah, man, she wasn't supposed to do that as a Playboy centerfold. So she kind of crossed the lines too. So he has her personal number now, and now he has direct access to her. So now we see this recreation of an actual call. Okay, so there's a recreation of an actual call.
I missed you tonight on the line. I waited for you to call and you didn't, but that's okay.
So Lindbergh find out that Stacy and Jim were headed out to play to the Playboy Mansion in September. He didn't figure that out. I'm pretty sure Stacy told him that. So he requested that Stacy meet up with him while she was there. And Karina's like, I remember telling her that you really should not do this. I'm thinking she wasn't happy in her marriage. That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking this was like something she wasn't getting in her marriage. She wasn't getting this type of attention. Maybe her husband was treating her like a commodity, like a product, and she wasn't getting this, what she felt was this intimate relationship with this other dude. So Karina is adamant that she's like, girl, you shouldn't go meet this dude. This is not a good idea. And remember, she was younger. She's younger than Stacy. So she agreed to it. She's like, yeah, we can meet. But then she ghosted the dude. I don't know if she ghosted him, but her schedule got busy and it didn't work out. So they ended up not meeting. And of course, Freakazoid, he couldn't handle it. He got cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. He was already cuckoo, but he got cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. He went into Freakazoid rage mode. And it starts this vicious spiral. Like, he started getting worse now. And now we hear this recreation of another message. It's another recreation of a phone call.
It's James Lindbergh, and this message is for Stacy Arthur. I want her to know that I'm in love with her. I do love you. I'm in love with you. And it hurts.
I just really think it's going to be best if we take a break. I just don't think it's worth it. It was nice talking to you, and I felt we developed a really good friendship.
So now the dude's in love with her. And now we're way past the unhealthy relationship phase. We way past that. So I think she got to the point where this thing went way. I mean, she's using words like they dated, take a break, and she was giving him real information. That's the thing. Accepting his gifts. And I know she was making this money on the side, but and I'm not just saying because she was a playmate. If a girl worked at a pizza restaurant and a guy came in every time he come in to order pizza, he always hits on her. And then the next time he come in, you know, he start bringing her little gifts sooner or later. And I'm not talking about a guy just trying to, you know, like shoot his shot. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, because there's sort of like a courtship type thing. I'm talking about where it's one sided, but she's giving him the signs that she's not interested, but he's not picking them up, and she's not giving them into a manner to where anyone would know. Because for Freakazoids, it takes directness for them. You can't be subtle. And I don't know why she didn't realize he was a Freakazoid. I think she was just still trying to treat him just like she would treat anybody who was just trying to hit on her. You can't treat a crazy guy like this. You can't treat him like that. So we hear Jim Tetrick, that retired PD, he's saying he think that message may have made James, made Jim, what is it? Made James. Hold on, man. How many Jims are there in this damn? How many? Okay, so this is Jim Tetrick. Her husband's name is Jim. And isn't the guy, this crazy guy named Jim, or is it James? Okay, this is the guy we started the episode off with, the retired officer. He's saying that, you know, the way she did this made him more impulsive. And it made him want to not, because she broke it off. And now he can't call her. So what's next? He got to go see her. And so we hear the reporter saying, you know, in 1991, stalking wasn't even a crime nationally. I don't even think it's a crime nationally now. So it wasn't even a crime. Like stalking, that wasn't even anything police would even take serious. So you would not be on high alert. And we even hear Holly Madison saying she's had people come to her home and she lives in a gated community, and they somehow get into a gated community, knocking on her door, banging on the door, screaming her name. So now we hear Jim, the retired officer, again talking about on October 20th, James Lindbergh set off from Sacramento, California on a train and traveled to Cincinnati. He rented a car in Cincinnati and then drove to Belle Fountain. He checked into a local hotel and he was looking all around for Stacy. And so on October 29th, 1991, he had been in the motel for a few days. He's still pissed off, and you know, this guy traveled 2,000 miles. He's looking for some sort of resolution. Whatever resolution he's looking for, he's adamant about it. On the 29th, he went to this gift shop and bought Stacy a gift. Then he went downtown just looking for Stacy. But he ran into Jim. He ran into her husband. And he decided to give him that gift and ask him to give it to Stacy. And so he also wanted to take a picture of Stacy and get it autographed. So Stacy's husband, Jim, he told the dude to get lost. And then things got heated. So witnesses say they heard a loud argument. Lindbergh left. Oh, and we hear this is Jana saying this. Lindbergh left Jim. He went back into the tanning salon. And he said, if this guy comes looking for me again, or comes in here, call the police. Because he seems, you know, like he's off his gourd. Like he's fucking crazy. Then Jim left the salon, went out to get in his car. And his car was parked right out front of the building, right in front of the salon. And we see this redneckman. We see Lindbergh sort of running up the street. He has like a camera around his neck, hanging off a camera strap. And he has like a backpack of some sort. And so witnesses say he looks kind of jittery, like he's just kind of jumpy, like kind of acting weird, like he got caught with his hand in the cookie jar. And then so he comes running down from the parking lot yelling, and people were starting to come out, sort of, you know, try to see what's going on. What's all the yelling about? And they we see the reenactment. He has this case with him, like this. It looks like a camera case. Several witnesses witness Lindbergh produce a handgun. So that case he had a gun in it. So he takes out the gun, fired multiple times at Jim Arthur at very close range. Okay, that was a twist. I did not see that coming. So he shot this dude in broad daylight on the street in front of a ton of, like, two dozen witnesses. He shot him once in the face, twice in the chest, and when Jim Arthur turned away from him, or James Arthur turned away from him, he shot him three times in the back. Jesus Christ. And Jim was dead almost immediately. This is sad, man. I did not see this coming. God damn. So this dude came all the way from Sacramento looking for her, ended up running into her husband, knew where to find her husband, and fucking murdered him. Jesus Christ. So now Freakazoid starts running. He run back to his car. Witnesses say he raised the gun up to himself and shot himself in the head. So we're back to Danielle Arthur. She said she was 5 years old. She had just gotten home from half-day kindergarten, had lunch, and she remembered there was a car that pulled up. Two guys got out, and they were looking for her mom. And she said, Stacy comes running out of the house yelling, your daddy's dead. And we hear his sister saying, she remembered getting to the phone. Someone said, your brother's been fatally shot. This was a twist I did not see coming. Now we see Stacy Arthur in this news interview, February 1992.
When somebody's gunned down in cold blood, someone that you love, that's beyond being able to describe the amount of pain that you go through.
I don't believe Stacy ever thought Lindbergh was dangerous. And I do believe that Jim and Stacy both thought that they could handle whatever came their way.
It wasn't until after James Lindbergh's death that people realized just how obsessed with Stacy he was.
He decorated his motel room with photographs of Stacy Arthur. There was a calendar where he had circled all her photos and had a lot of that hanging around the room. We had found in the motel also that he had recorded many conversations and had many cassettes of these conversations in his possession.
He had 31 tapes of all of these conversations that he had with Stacy Arthur. And they started to get a better picture of, you know, sort of the insane, intense jealousy that he has against James Arthur.
One of those tapes was transcribed, and it reads, this message is for Stacy Arthur. I want her to know that I'm in love with her. And that's not a good thing, because she happened to be married this time. Kind of goofs me up totally. And it hurts, and I'm in love with you. Just know, there you are, and here I am, and there your husband. Lindbergh quit his job in October of 91, almost immediately after Stacy had left him the message about taking a break. His neighbors basically reported that he was acting a little bit unhinged and getting a little bit less predictable.
And so, of course, it was headline news all over the place. Now we had James Allen Arthur's memorial. We see the people consoling each other. I mean, man, what a loss, man. I mean, think of his kids, their mom, their biological left, and now their dad is dead. So, of course, Stacy was devastated. She was only 23 years old. So they got married when she was 19, and now she's 23, and I think she got 3-4 kids. After Jim get murdered, Stacy had this downward spiral. A lot of shit started happening to her, allegations that she started to make. She said she was sexually assaulted at the Playboy Mansion by two security guards. She said two security guards raped her. Two security guards and a butler. Jesus Christ. Those bodyguards said it was consensual. What? Oh, so they at least they did have sex with her. She said it was rape. They said it was consensual. So she sues Playboy. Now she's accusing the magazine of negligence in death of her husband. And she's suing for $70 million. Yeah, I don't think that shit is going to fly. Playboy didn't give your information to this dude. Only way it could be Playboy's fault if they chained your ass to a phone and told you to make those calls. But there's proof that she called that dude. So that's not going to fly. I bet that was the first evidence that Playboy used was she called him. She planned to meet this dude. Yeah, that was no evidence. It's dismissed without prejudice and she never refiles. We hear the journalist saying this was the beginning of the end. And then we see the other from The Wire, the Sunday Star, Playboy ending relationship with Arthur. So easy come, easy go. And we hear Holly Madison saying, Playboy handles tragedies by burying them and not acknowledging them. Isn't that how all big businesses do? That's not like any other big business. That's what they do. If they can bury that shit, they bury it. And that's it. That's what they do. And they cut her off like she never existed. That's what they do also. When they're done with you, when you become more of a liability to them than an asset, you're done. You're gone. And Holly Madison saying that she thinks the only reason that Stacy never became Playboy Playmate of the Year, especially judging by her trajectory, was because of the incident and they wanted to distance themselves from her, from Stacy. And we see this Associated Press article says, Playboy severs ties with former Miss Ohio.
She received all this attention because of this horrible tragedy. She had essentially given everything to Playboy and then they spurned her.
All the dreams aren't necessarily what's really important. All that glitters isn't gold.
In 2019, Stacy passed away after a brief illness. Sure, I'm a dreamer, says Stacy. I've been dreaming all my life, and I love storybook endings. I just think it's so sad to read about somebody who had all these dreams and it all got taken from her. Stacy wanted that storybook ending, and she never got it.
And that's it for this episode. Send all your questions and comments to docutalkthrough@gmail.com. That's docutalkthrough@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.